Hello and welcome to the Betches Sub Podcast. I'm Sammy Fishbein.
I'm Amanda Duberman.
And for those of you who are just tuning in, the Betches Sub Podcast is your bi-weekly rundown of all the crazy shit that's happening in the news, explained by your two funniest friends,
which is us.
Today we're talking about
the youth climate strike,
Justin Trudeau in blackface,
and what promise did Trump make to what world leader?
Let's get into it.
Betches Media presents.
I like beer. I don't know if you do. Okay. Do you like beer, Senator, or not?
My party is going bat crazy.
You're the pop.
Alternative facts.
Oh, goodness.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
America!
So, Sammy, what a week. What's getting you through it?
Big day.
Big day, yeah.
So, what's getting me through this week is the... Did you see on, I think it was Tuesday... Elizabeth Warren's crowd in Washington Square Park?
You know I did. It gave me chills because I do like her, but also because it was just like, it's amazing, especially because we live here and it was just like the pictures were amazing.
Bigger than somebody's inauguration crowd.
Yeah, it really was.
So apparently she pulled a crowd of over 15,000 people in Washington Square Park. And then she waited. She stayed after for 4 hours taking a selfie with every single person.
Yeah, I saw her. Right. I saw her on the news and people were like, oh, my God, you waited for 4 hours. Like, how could you wait for 4 hours? Why would you do that? And she was like, well, so did the last dude online. Like, that's, isn't that amazing?
I know.
It's lovely.
OK, the fact that she's it prompted me to Google how old is Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, yeah.
She's 70 years old.
Yeah.
The fact that she's 70 years old and you compare her to her other, mm-hmm. you know, potential opponents, Bernie Sanders, 78, Joe Biden, 76, and Donald Trump, 73. And the level of energy she seems to have.
It's crazy.
Like, she's doing campaign events every single day, and then she's adding on to them by speaking to every single person.
She's literally always standing up. She's always bouncing around on the debates. It's amazing. It's nuts.
She's a bounce. She has a lot of... She's what they would call pep in her step.
Right.
I were like in the 80s.
Like, I imagine her in her last year of her presidency, if it were 8 years, like, she's still going to be like that. Joe Biden's going to be into his 80s.
He'll be 86.
Oh, my God. That's okay.
Well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 93.
I know. That's true.
But she has... Ruth Bader Ginsburg has Elizabeth Warren energy.
For sure. Totally. She earns it. I mean,
you don't beat cancer like 4 times without some Elizabeth Warren energy.
That's true.
EWE.
I'll even concede that like Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders seem to have like a vigor to them that most older people don't. But Elizabeth Warren's is still like honestly,
next level. Maybe like that bitch has been in the gym.
Yeah, for sure. Like maybe this isn't the thing to like say with my boss, but like the second I am qualified to not have to work anymore, I'm not working anymore.
You know, your boss agrees.
Yeah.
Like I'm just like, when does it end?
I can cash that in. Like when I am 65, I will shrink my lifestyle. I will live off Social Security. I'm not going to work anymore.
Well, we are homebodies.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah, totally.
Look, same. Look, I'm trying to end this all before 65.
I know.
I can't.
I'm always like, how do people do this? And I forget that like not everybody is like a crippling introvert.
I know.
Like, and I don't understand how they aren't.
Right. Like, how do people get out of bed? I don't know. I would love for just like a piece of Elizabeth Warren's energy, but I don't want to take any because she needs
exactly.
it all.
Right. Right. Yeah. Totally.
She needs all of her superpowers.
Yeah.
Okay. That. Amanda, what is getting you through this week in Trump's America?
So this week, you might have seen the news that Trump's administration took away California's right to set its own auto emission standards. So like tailpipe, basically cars are like the biggest cause of carbon emissions that greenhouse gas emissions in this country. And so in California, they like have permission to sort of set stricter regulations.
Oh, is that because of states' rights, which Republicans usually argue in favor of?
I believe so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this is also a story of hypocrisy.
Right.
Because, as well as destroying the climate.
And Republicans also are all about like big business, letting them do what they need to do, trickle down, all that shit. But even automakers are like, no, thanks. We're good. Like, we already have been doing it this way. We want to be able to, like, we've already changed things. We want to be able to sell our cars in California. Please, no thanks. They literally wrote a letter. They were like, don't do this. This doesn't help us. Nobody wants this.
So when it comes to states' rights versus businesses,
yeah,
it seems like they favor businesses, but even the businesses are like, this isn't necessary.
Yeah. But the funniest thing about this to me, that's not getting me through the week. That sucks. But this is part of like a broader attempt by the administration to roll back all of these like efficiency standards to, you know, like keep our planet livable for like a little while. There's this sort of like big campaign to make dishwashers great again. A bunch of old people are really pissed that their dishwashers are slow. Apparently, before we were like, shit, let's save the planet, your dishwashers could like use up a ton of energy and water. Now there are efficiency standards. And now I think about it, like, if you look at your dishwasher, it's got that little star on it, like
energy star.
Yeah, exactly. People are not happy with that. These people are literally like, don't you remember? Here, I'm going to read the quote. This is a petition that is circulating from a group associated with the Koch brothers, of course.
What's the group called? Freedom Works.
Or Freedom Works, yeah. A libertarian offshoot. Yeah. They're claiming dishwashers used to clean a full load of filthy dishes in under an hour, but now they take an average of 2.5 hours and still leave dishes dirty. All of this is thanks to crazy environmentalist rules. So they like are circulating this petition asking the administration to let dishwasher companies like make cooler dishwashers. Again, even the dishwasher companies don't want this. They wrote a letter to the administration when they were hearing that the administration was considering this. Because also the administration, like, weakened, like, said, like, use whatever light bulb you want. Like, make crazy light bulbs.
Well, because apparently Trump, and we posted this video on our Instagram, yeah, apparently Trump right. says that the light bulbs we use now make him look orange.
Yeah.
This is like the dear leader level it's we're so at funny. Now. The light bulbs make him look orange, no. and the hurricane was going to hit Alabama sure. until it didn't.
That is true. Those are indisputable facts. Yeah, so even dear the dishwasher companies are like, we don't need this. Like, we already make them this way. It would cost us a lot of money to go back.
Also, like,
and when what? The next president comes in and is like, dude, no.
Wait, like, but even the premise that, like, you're mad about your dishwasher.
Right.
Like, how much also, better right. could the old dishwashers have been?
Right. Like, can I also remind you that you can wash your dish and dry it with a towel in like
oh, my God.
I know.
Like, with your hands?
Have you heard?
Like, your God-given hands?
You can use your hands. You wow. can use your hands.
You know.
Even if they're soft and unweathered, you'll be fine.
Wow. That is, you know.
Shocking.
You can always tell a lady I by know. Her hands.
Totally. And these are obviously people that, like, are not going to live to see the effects of climate change. They just want their dishes to dry.
They just only want to live to see their dishes dry. They're like, you know, I don't
wait
know.
Wait 2.5 hours.
I don't know if I'm going to live 2 more hours. Wait. This myth about the dishwasher taking 2 hours is also a lie.
Okay.
My yeah, dishwasher does not mine, take but I don't 2 hours.
Yeah.
Do not use it for environmental reasons.
No, I really don't know why we don't use it. Like, I live with my boyfriend and he's like, it's what's the point? Just do it. Like, we do use it. My mom sort of like launders her Goodwill obsession through me, and she'll just buy me a bunch of flatware I don't need
yeah.
and then send it to me. And so we store it in the dishwasher.
Okay.
Yeah. So we fair. Have like shit in our dishwasher so we can't actually use it.
So the dishwasher is occupied.
Yeah.
But
sorry,
that
Mom.
Is really, that's really funny.
Yeah. But another, sorry.
Yo, go ahead.
Another like energy thing that we wanted to throw in. So tomorrow is like the youth climate strike across the world. I've been hearing about this just because Greta Thunberg is talking about it all the time. Our fave.
Oh, love her.
Yeah. And it's cool because New York City public schools have announced that kids can skip school to go to the march. So 1 million kids basically have school off tomorrow because parents were sort of like writing in fake sick notes because they wanted their kids to participate.
Yeah.
And then finally they were like, let's just give kids the day off. So I'm excited. It's going to be in a bunch of cities across the world.
Why don't we just give kids the rest of their life off since the planet's going to go to shit and it doesn't matter?
Right. Like, why are you like learning that's, long division when...
That's what I think about anytime I make a bad choice. I'm like, well, you know what? There's not going to be yeah, a planet, totally. So it doesn't matter.
I know.
That's exactly. like how I've started to reason with things. But, you know, making dishwashers great again seems like a good cause. You know, this yeah. is clearly just such a reaction to like a bunch of like people who feel threatened. They're it's like, you know what? There senseless. Are too many transgender people on my TV yes. and my dishwasher is too slow.
Right. And those things are absolutely related.
Yeah. But it is. Here's
right,
the thing.
Exactly.
In their head, it is related. This is like a world that they can't live in where the dishwasher takes a little longer,
right.
even though it doesn't.
Right.
You know what? Actually, I don't really know the stats on dishwasher length, but whatever.
It just doesn't seem like a battle worth fighting. Like, honestly, get a life.
Yeah. Get a life.
Yeah.
Get a life.
Ugh.
Okay. Main news.
Okay. What do you think we're starting with?
Justin Trudeau.
Oh, my God.
And his what he's calling brown face,
brown
which
face.
Is very obviously black face.
Yeah. And then there are two other instances. Well, okay. We'll start with the first one. So last night, Time magazine, which, like, good for Time. I haven't seen them
they got
have
a scoop
for a while. Yeah. They published a photo of Justin Trudeau. He's the Canadian prime minister, sort of known as like a progressive heartthrob. In brown face.
Ivanka's like intense.
Yeah.
You can see a lot of pictures where she's like lusting after
for sure.
him. Like Jared Kushner sitting 3 feet to the left. And
totally.
She's like, oh, swoon.
So I'm that one of Melania who's like literally going to kiss his mouth. Like,
yeah.
Please give me asylum.
Well, now we're about to find out why they
I
like
know.
Him so much.
Yeah.
And it is because of
racist stuff. Yeah. So at the first instance, 2001, he was teaching at a private school. He went to an Arabian Nights party, and he wore an Aladdin costume, and he painted his face and arms brown. What's funny is when I was reading this, it's not funny. Very, very, very brown. Like, I honestly, the picture is black and white. Yeah, the picture is black and white. And when I was like, oh, cool, I got to look at this picture. I couldn't see him. It took me not several minutes. It felt like several minutes. But he's so dark in it.
Yeah. Like, he's hard to find in the picture. The other thing that no one is talking about in this photo is that he is fully grabbing a woman by the neck. Like, he's touching her whole chest in a way that Al Franken or Joe Biden would get fired for.
Right, his entire hand.
No one's talking about that, but he's it looks like he's choking her.
There's a lot wrong with this picture. And yeah, gotta like triage. He's wearing like a
These are his colleagues.
His colleagues. This is in 2001. He was 29.
This is the year of 9/11.
That's true. Yeah, it would have been. Well, I don't know if it was Halloween or what the
it must have been Halloween. So it was like right after.
Yeah, right. Oh God! And it's then you're wearing he's wearing like a really offensive approximation of a turban.
It's not an Aladdin costume. Aladdin wears a fez.
No, right.
He does.
Right. Yeah.
And a blue suit, not a white.
So when I was looking at this,
I know my Aladdin costume.
Somebody was like, the person I was with was like, "Are you sure he's not blue? Aladdin's not blue. Is somebody
in genie?
The genie is blue." And I was like, "I don't think that would be a pretty dark blue, and Aladdin wouldn't have." Publish it if it
Aladdin is also not this color. Aladdin was like a slightly darker
right
shade.
The picture we're looking at where it's brown face, like clearly the idea was to make
purple.
Him
purple. Jasmine wears
right
but he doesn't
that's why
wear
I didn't know why somebody
turban.
Thought he was blue. No, he definitely doesn't wear this turban the way it's painted on, because also just Aladdin's skin tone I don't think is that dark.
No, Aladdin is not that dark.
Trudeau is definitely just like going for excess here.
Yes. And there are other pieces of evidence that show that this is maybe a hobby of his.
Right. So he seemed to have some clue this was coming out, and he issued an apology pretty much immediately. We'll play that clip.
This is part of the reflections we all have to have on how we judge the mistakes that we've made in the past, how we take responsibility for them, and mostly how we keep moving forward as a society, recognizing that we do need to do more to fight anti-black racism, systemic discrimination, unconscious bias, all these things that are present that I'm certainly not immune from. I think there's certainly a significant reflection that I've had over the past while on this, and if it leads other people to have reflections, then that's a good thing. But this is very much about me taking responsibility for an action I really shouldn't have taken. I think it's well known that communities and people who live with intersectionalities and face discrimination, the likes of which I have never personally had to experience, is a significant thing that is very hurtful, and that's why I am so deeply disappointed in myself.
So he does seem, he's very shaky in it, and he's definitely contrite. He did acknowledge that it was racist. The funniest part about his apology to me, the apology wasn't funny, but what I found amusing is that a reporter asked him, you know, so when this happens in the U.S., people are often asked to resign. And it was just funny that it happens so much here. Like, it's happened such a notable number of times that it's like, well, when this happens in the U.S., like, it's just something that happens. Obviously, the closest parallel is a couple months ago when Ralph Northam was in his med school yearbook wearing blackface.
Which was even earlier than this.
Yeah.
But with this, I felt that his apology was much more contrite than the typical apologies you get from, like, American politicians who are kind of like trying to like make excuses for
Didn't
it. Like
Ralph Northam originally say like that's
it wasn't
not me.
Him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not obviously the one who's like has the authority. We're not the ones who have the authority to accept or reject his apology. Yeah. But I do feel that it was more apologetic, like on a sincere level, than other apologies we've heard.
I felt that way too. And then so in that sort of press conference, he was asked, did you ever do that before? I wonder if they planted that too, just to give him an opportunity to say, yes, I have. So he references one other instance where sometime in the 90s, and it might have been earlier than that because he was in high school, and he said he keeps saying he wore makeup. He said he wore makeup to sing the Jamaican folk song Deo at a high school talent show.
I mean, technically, he probably used makeup.
Used makeup. But, like, you straight up painted your entire body. He's trying to say, he won't say, like, I was in blackface or brownface. And this one was straight up blackface.
Yeah.
But he says he put on some makeup. And then, a third instance. He failed to mention this third instance last night.
Yeah.
Came out this morning of him also wearing racist makeup.
Right. He's wearing, there's a video.
He's
wearing a white t-shirt, ripped jeans, his arms and legs also. He went all in.
Went all
he
out.
Didn't leave one piece of skin uncovered. He's also wearing an Afro wig.
Do you think it's just the same paint? Like he just has it?
I think he might have it. It always seems to be the same shade. Don't know if that's this always one in too, stock like, at the you store. Can't,
you can barely see him in the picture.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
He's wearing an Afro wig, it seems.
It does feel that this was something he did that he thought was okay.
For sure.
That he clearly was like, I can dress up as a black person and it's fine. Yeah. Or like any other ethnicity. Like I genuinely think that he, I don't know about his racism levels, but like right. I do feel like he thought that this was fine.
Right.
And maybe at the time it, you know, was more culturally acceptable, but yeah. Seems like he was doing this a lot. And
right.
I think the reason that it's like so particularly offensive is that Justin Trudeau isn't just some like random guy who became the prime minister. Like his dad was the prime minister. He grew up in like the top of society, like kind of the epitome of what you would call the patriarchy.
For sure.
And for someone like this, when it's not like every, it's not like he was, it seems that he was the only one doing it in all these situations.
That's true. That's a good point.
So that he's the one who comes from this very powerful family that he's dressing in blackface. It kind of is like, really not good.
It's not good. It's bizarre. And you know, the video specifically, like he thinks it's funny. He thinks it's amusing. He thinks that this is a costume. He thinks being black is a costume.
It's very clear he
and
thinks
he's performing that. Being a black person, which is really, really icky.
Right. It's very uncomfortable. And it's sort of like, okay, you really, it sort of feels like, okay, he needs to be like educated on.
Yeah.
Or at least the former version of himself needed to be educated on why this was so offensive.
Right.
I mean, I wonder what relationship Canadians have with blackface.
Yeah.
I am curious about that because did Canada have slavery and like minstrel shows and stuff?
Yeah, that's definitely like the really painful association here. I mean, he definitely, so this also couldn't come at a worse time for him. He's up for re-election on October 21st, a month away. He's basically tied with conservatives. His party has like a slight edge. Another thing about his party is that everything you were reading, it was like the Liberal Party confirms it's him. It's like, is that just how it works there? Like you just have like your team and they're like, yeah, that's our guy.
Yeah, I think so.
Like it's not him. Like, yes, that's me. It's just like, yeah.
Well, in our party, the Liberal Party kicks you out for the smallest thing you
just
do.
Just on Twitter.
Yeah.
Nobody actually...
I mean, yeah, it's bad. I don't think we want conservatives ruling Canada, guys. Like,
oh my God. I know. We have to go there soon.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to move there.
Right.
So, like,
we need, yeah, Justin Trudeau, this is why this is a domestic issue to us because it involves our potential future in Canada.
Yeah, like, that was my number one spot. Like, I
really?
Was scout. Yeah. I'm like trying to scout houses in Vancouver.
Totally.
So, just for like later, like, and then I'm going to go retire there before age 65, hopefully.
Right. Just bounce around and get a golden retriever like Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. Oh, I'm dying to meet Bailey Warren.
I know.
Bailey Warren and Bruce Bader Ginsburg could be best friends.
For sure. Yeah.
And Mordecai.
Mordecai, yeah. He'll just be like in the background. He'll be an aide.
Yeah. In his little chair being like, hello, I can't eat anything.
Yes. My dog has a paralyzed esophagus, so he eats in a special way.
So sad.
But we joke that he should be like a spokesperson for... Obamacare because he pet insurance you still can't get if you have a pre-existing condition, sadly.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think we could get it to treat things that are like not related to his mega esophagus, it's called. But if like he gets
his
sick
mega
it's
esophagus.
Called mega esophagus, yeah, because he has an enlarged and paralyzed esophagus.
Both enlarged and
yes,
paralyzed.
Yes, it just doesn't work and it's huge. I think it also doesn't work because it's huge. I don't know,
that is
it just like flops around in there and he has to eat a special way. I know,
that is so sad.
I know.
Okay.
Anyway.
I don't even remember how we got to that. Oh, the Bailey Warren, Canada.
Healthcare.
Yes.
But apparently, I mean, there's been questions and I feel like we've been hearing this. When Trudeau came in, it was really fun. He was like a progressive heartthrob. He made his cabinet like pretty gender equitable and was constantly talking about his own feminism. And there were times where I was like, this dude's talking about it a lot. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And he's had an issue lately, especially with there's sort of like this scandal that accusation surfaced that he had bullied his former justice minister who is an indigenous woman, which adds a dimension to it that's not great, and tried to pressure her to settle like corruption charges against a Quebec engineering company he presumably had like buddies in. And that's been like a big sort of scandal surrounding him.
Well, when your dad's the prime minister, you probably like pick up a few of those habits.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that I was kind of like, he's been in power. You can't do that. But I can see why he thought that was okay. I cannot see why he thought this was okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when I saw, I was like, maybe the problem is that we either glorify or cancel people like at the drop of a hat, and that maybe like he's not perfect.
Yeah.
Is he the worst person out there? No, that mantle is held by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Or Mitch McConnell or Stephen Miller. So yeah, he's not the worst person out there, but he's also not perfect just because he like claims he, just because he identifies as a progressive.
Totally.
And he has some issues, obviously, in like the way he thinks or has thought in the past. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, he's not a perfect guy.
It's interesting because you think about here, and like we were saying, I don't really know the racial makeup of Canada's population, but obviously in this country, there are, you know, really painful racial issues. Yeah. And a person, like if our president did this, their ability to govern a population that has a lot of African Americans and people of color is just so compromised that I can see why stepping down would be maybe the best option to consider. Like in America. So I do wonder how it would play out there, like how it will play out there, given like they do have real issues, especially with their like massive indigenous communities. But there's such a like the association with blackface here is such a uniquely American thing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Canada has unique parts of it, too, that I'm sure we'll find out more about soon.
You know, I'm curious. I know we have a lot of Canadian listeners of this podcast. If you are a Canadian listener, please feel free to weigh in.
Yeah.
DM me or DM Betches Sub or DM Amanda. I'm at Sammy. We're at Betches_Sub. Yeah. She's at A-D-U-U-B.
I know. I need a cooler pun. It's three U's.
A-D-U-U-U-B.
Yeah. Because I really want to make it like rub-a-dub because my name's like Amanda Duberman, but it's all taken, but I won't accept that.
Okay,
I'm like waiting for somebody to give it up.
Maybe there's a way.
There's something.
I'll look into it. But
yeah,
if you're a Canadian listener, please let us know your thoughts. I'm genuinely curious what someone from there has to say.
Totally.
And also let me know if there's any good real estate you see. Before we move on to the next story, which is, you know, one of corruption and sadness, we want to tell you that if you sign up for the email, the Betches Sup email, which comes every day, written by Lisa, so fucking funny.
It's really funny.
By the end of September, you will be automatically entered to win a pair of AirPods, which will assist you in listening to this podcast, among other things.
Yep.
Lots
of enriching podcasts. Yeah.
So
sign up before the end of the month.
If you sign up, go to betches.co/sup-sign-up. You will be automatically entered. So like no big deal. Now, let's say you're already signed up and you have a friend who you feel like needs to know some stuff so you guys can like talk about it and have some convotainment.
Maybe start your own podcast,
but like don't. Unless it's about something totally different.
Yeah.
You can basically refer friends. It's super easy. And then we will send you free shit, basically. Like free fun shit. So basically what it is, you go to referral.betches.com. You sign up. You enter your address so that we can send you the aforementioned free shit. And then you get a unique link that you then send to your friends. Every time they sign up using your link, you're automatically like registered as having registered a person. And then we will automatically send you shit. The shit we will send you are stickers, a Michelle Obama pop socket, a notebook that mocks Donald Trump on the cover, a plastic wine glass that says freedom juice on it, and it is good for the planet. Also, remember that.
And you can get all that stuff if you refer a lot of friends.
Yeah.
And it's not a crazy amount of friends.
No, it's not. Like the max is 20 friends.
I don't have a ton of friends, but I could get all that stuff.
I don't think I could invite 20 friends to a birthday party, to be honest. No, I probably could. It was just, you know, I don't know if I would invite them all to the sup. You know, we'll see.
Yeah. We'll also have a highlight on our stories just taking you through how to do it and what's available so you can actually like see the wares. And I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Exactly. And the other thing we wanted to ask you is to continue tweeting at Elizabeth Warren to come on this podcast.
You guys are awesome. I love all of the tweets.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll retweet you and they'll be on her radar. We know that somebody on her campaign looks at her tweets.
True. They do, because she does sometimes answer.
Right. Right.
I mean, maybe it's her, maybe it's them, but it wouldn't be surprising if it's her.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to the corruption?
Let's do it. The main news is obviously more corruption. Yeah. So this week, former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski, he was subpoenaed to testify before the House Judiciary Committee on Tuesday. It was a complete disaster. So this was one of several hearings. This is sort of what these House members are billing as like impeachment light. Like this is like the lead up to what we're going to do to try to impeach him. And yeah, it was a disaster. He didn't answer. I mean, it was kind of like the Bill. Was it the Bill Barr one where he just was like, I'm not going to answer that, or just didn't. He didn't answer the question. He just said statements that were not answers.
Bill Barr was a little more crafty than this guy.
He was brat.
Corey Lewandowski is a brat who's running for Congress. He's running for Senate. And he literally at one point in the hearing told people to go to his campaign website.
Right.
So that's just a little anecdote of how seriously he takes the United States Congress that he's running to be in.
And whose endorsement is probably going to be critical to that is Trump's.
Yeah. I mean, it was a typical hearing. Audience of one, protect the mob boss.
Yeah.
That's the MO. That's what we are literally living amongst a transnational mob community that is trying to rule all the major countries of the Northern Hemisphere.
I believe
mostly.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what's happening.
Yeah. So it mostly sort of revolved around
crime syndicate. That's what.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah.
That's the Sarah Kendzior phrase.
Yeah. Syndicate. This revolved around so Lewandowski is in the Mueller report. Like, he talked to Mueller and he sort of confirmed in the Mueller report. It says that Trump asked Lewandowski to ask Jeff Sessions to like chill out on the Mueller investigation.
He asked Don McGahn the same thing.
Right. Right. So, and neither of them did it, which is the only reason why Trump is not right now like in huge trouble, because they both just didn't end up taking steps. Like, Lewandowski did say, he confirmed that, yes, he asked me to do that. He dictated something to him. And he said that, like, he made some effort to meet with Sessions, but they never actually, like, did meet.
No, he said that he tried to have a private meeting with Sessions, like, out of the office.
Right.
He was like, you know, we're socially friends, so, you know, we meet out of the office. He also said in the hearing that he wanted to meet somewhere that wasn't Sessions' turf.
Mm.
And also not go into a government building so there wouldn't be a public record of him, of them meeting.
Casual,
all normal behavior.
Yeah, he was actually supposed to be there with, there were two empty chairs next to him. One of them was for Rob Porter,
the wife beater.
Yeah. And the other was for Rick Dearborn, who were actual White House aides. The crazy thing about, so Corey Lewandowski never worked in the White House. He never worked for President Trump. He was a campaign manager for a time, but Trump is trying to claim executive privilege over their conversations, even though Trump was just a dude. He wasn't president yet. Like,
he's still just a dude.
Right. Well, I guess he was president when he told Lewandowski to, like, do this. But Lewandowski never worked for the White House, like, properly.
Correct. Yes.
So that presumably is not actually covered.
Yeah. I mean, that is, like, the kind of, that's the way that this administration was just basically saying, we will not cooperate with any of this. We will make up bullshit reasons why someone who just should not be able to claim privilege can.
Yeah. He did. It reminded me of, like, I think you say that, like, we, Democrats need to be more like Republicans in the sense that Republicans are like hall monitors. Like, they know the weird rules. Workarounds. Like, so he was asked a lot to read directly from the Mueller report, but he wouldn't, because he remembered where Mueller wouldn't do that. Because Mueller was like, I don't want to politicize this. And so, you know, at the beginning of the Mueller testimony, they asked him a few times, like, can you read this? And Mueller was like, no, I told you I won't. And so Lewandowski was like being a real dick about it. Like, nope, you're welcome to read it. I'm not going to read it.
But sometimes he also would be like, I'm going to like pretend like I'm looking for the page so that I don't have to like address your question, which was also took up a lot of the time. I mean, when I say Democrats need to be more like Republicans, I also mean that they need to be much more ruthless than they are. Like,
you can be lawfully ruthless.
You can be lawful. That's what sometimes the Republicans are doing. Right. Sometimes they're not lawfully, but sometimes they are. And honestly, like, so much of the way our country is run is based on norms rather than actual laws. Mm-hmm. So that's how they get around everything. Also, I happen to think that the Democrats could not be doing a worse job.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this too.
Yeah, like, I can't think of anything that they could be doing that could literally be like a worse performance
and it's
than
like
what they're doing.
Every time they try to get a dude to, they do this, it doesn't work. It doesn't. I mean, I guess the idea is like make more people say out loud what's in the Mueller report. But like by now.
Bigger picture even.
Yeah.
They could.
But the guys keep saying like, no, I don't have to. And it's just like a 5-hour clown show.
They could literally be on vacation this entire time. And it would be less harmful than what they're doing. Because they're trying so poorly that they're failing. And it's blowing every chance they have at actually achieving anything.
I think that's why.
That's like, why they should just go on vacation.
I know. That's why they are so visibly frustrated in these hearings, especially yesterday. Like, apparently last night they all held a meeting about holding him in contempt. because didn't answer any questions. I know. Like
he doesn't which give also one for them
doesn't mean anything
about being held in contempt.
Yeah. It's one of those things where they were saying it like, so Nancy Pelosi was like, kind of seemed to be throwing shade at Jerry Nadler, who I just like, bless that guy. He's really,
he's the only one who's trying to do anything.
Right. Like, why didn't you do it then and there? But
yeah. Anything that they're trying is Jerry Nadler. For sure. That's it. So because you only have one guy doing anything.
Right.
And Elizabeth Warren being like, you should impeach him. You like have nothing happening.
Nothing is happening.
That's why it's so bad, because there's no one behind
it. It just invigorates the other side more and does nothing for Democrats or people that want the truth to come out.
The truth is Republicans are more effective.
Yeah.
In the bad, for sure. In the worst ways.
Yeah. Trump tweeted that the testimony was beautiful.
Oh, my God.
Beautiful.
Like and, his know, daughter.
Right. I know, exactly. So obviously, like, Lewandowski is angling for that. I mean, OK, maybe this is like ignorant, but is New Hampshire, can a Republican become a senator in New Hampshire? I mean, Susan Collins in Maine. Yeah. Yeah. It's probably the same sort of population with the
New
same.
New England is like, they're not more conservative, but they are more like traditional.
Yeah, there are a lot of older people or people that have jobs that, yeah.
Like my fiance's family is all from New England, and like they have a certain vibe that is conservative, not necessarily conservative ideology, but like their personal qualities are conservative. Yeah.
And there was a time where you could refer to somebody as a conservative Republican and didn't mean they were like,
they were this bad. Psychopath.
They were a psychopath. Yeah. Didn't care about people or anything. But.
Exactly. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. So where are we with impeachment? A majority of Democrats in the House, 136, do support it. But, you know, this has been such a long process of like, it was so unceremonious when we got to a majority, because every day it was like a couple more. Like, what? It doesn't mean anything that the majority.
Also,
like,
because they're still operating the way that we operate in like 2009.
Right.
Like, that's not how things are anymore. Like, we are in a world that moves so much quicker because you have the president literally declaring missile strikes out of nowhere on Twitter sometimes.
Yeah.
Like the fact that he like deferred to Saudi Arabia on like whether or not we're gonna like bomb Iran, essentially, the fact that that all
after
came out
they literally
Twitter,
murdered and cut up one of our journalists.
Oh yeah, and are like killing people in Yemen. Yeah. Like the fact that that could happen, and the Republic and the Democrats are like, you know, we almost got to a majority of people in favor of impeachment.
Exactly.
Like, where do you think you're getting any air in this news cycle?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think you're doing? Like, stop functioning like it is 2009. It's not. You need to fight a little bit dirtier.
I agree.
Be like a millennial on TikTok. No, sorry. Gen Z on TikTok.
Right.
Just throw that video up there.
Yeah. Just throw everything against the wall. See what happens. You never know.
Yeah. There are no millennials on TikTok except me. And I like posted one video and someone commented that I'm a mom.
A sub TikTok would be fun. Maybe that's.
Should we?
I don't know what we would put on it. We could just do like.
We would do like reactions to the
news. Yeah, that would be fun. Like the four of us just like reacting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Just read our texts aloud.
Yeah. Or like a TV showing the headline. Like, do you guys want us to have a TikTok? Let us know.
Yeah. I would love to know.
Okay.
So impeachment seems like it's still like DOA, except our one more thing is like a pretty crazy. I mean, we say this all the time. This is nuts. This is a pretty crazy story that broke last night, that a communication between President Trump and a world leader so alarmed a U.S. intelligence official that they filed a former whistleblower complaint with the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community. Now, the fact that we even know this for a fact means that complaint was like credible and legit. The complaint
claims, and it wasn't the whistleblower who went to the media. To be clear,
that's
the
true.
Whistleblower was trying to keep this under wraps.
Yes. Yeah. So it apparently claims that Trump made a promise to some foreign leader, some sort of promise. The identity of that foreign leader is not known, but we do know that he had a phone call. It happened in a window. So this was filed on August 12th. It happened sometime in the 5 weeks before that. In that time, The Washington Post said that he had a phone call with Putin. Kim Jong-un wrote some letters to him, and he met with leaders of Pakistan and Qatar. I don't really think that we haven't really heard anything much about his relationship with Pakistan and Qatar.
He also talked to the Netherlands, but I have a feeling it wasn't them.
I have a feeling if it was Norway, on the other hand.
We promise. Right, he loves the Norwegians.
So I was reading about this morning, and like, presidents probably have conversations with other presidents and leaders all the time where they do have these sort of little exchanges. I mean, that's what negotiation is, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
So this promise must have been pretty problematic.
Yeah, I imagine. I mean, I don't think I don't know what conversations between world leaders are really like. Yeah. I'm definitely not the person
who should definitely
ever be talking to a world leader, because right. I'd be making like weird ass promises too.
Right.
But like, again, not me.
So. Yeah. Right. So what's going on with this today? So like, apparently it reached such a level of concern that the intelligence community and the inspector general have an obligation to tell Congress, which I guess is what's happening now. Like I said, no details about who the world leader was or what Trump promised them. We only have an idea based on like what he, well, who he talked to.
Well, apparently what happened is that the whistleblower went to the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire. They were supposed to turn it over to Congress. They didn't turn it over to Congress, which is why the whistleblower went directly to Congress. And that's, I think, how it came out. But so speculation over who this person is. It's someone on the National Security Council. But that the National Security Council, I believe, has like 180-ish people mm-hmm. on it, some of whom are like the big appointed officials, like the John Bolton and, you know, those like the DNI, all right. these people who are super who are appointed or appointed officials, basically. But then you have like intelligent, like regular intelligence people who are on the National Security Council who do things like take notes in meetings.
Yeah.
Like from what I saw, it seemed that this person was more likely someone who was one of those like lower level staff members who's just part of the intelligence community yeah. rather than someone who Trump appointed.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And then I guess today, intelligence community inspector, his name's Michael Atkinson, had like a closed briefing with Congress where he again refused to disclose what it said or why, which is also just like, it seems weird because Trump has like a tense relationship with the national security like community and the intelligence community.
They're like, we can't trust you right. for shit, dude.
Yeah.
That's kind of the issue he has.
Right, right.
What do you think the promise was? Feel free to speculate.
I do think it was probably with Putin, right?
I think so. I think it was probably with Putin or Kim Jong-un, but I think Putin.
Yeah, I guess apparently before.
If it was a phone call.
Yeah, previously Trump has like assured North Korean leaders, Kim Jong-un, that he won't spy on them. But that was already known. If that's already known, then like, I don't think it would be that.
I would not be surprised if it is something as straight up as like, if you help me in this election.
Yes, I think that's.
I will something with Crimea or NATO, like kind of thing.
Yeah, I would really guess it's like election related.
Yeah. It, for someone to kind of like go out of their way to report this.
Right, right. It's a big deal. Like I said, we don't know like what is kosher for world leaders to discuss with each other without oversight, but I would guess there are casual little exchanges, this like tit for tats all the time that don't rise. Some of them probably are things that would concern the American people, but still don't rise to the point where somebody would file a complaint because it's illegal and really bad.
I imagine that most conversations between world leaders are not like hard promises over casual phone calls.
Yeah.
I imagine that those things are more like handled by like representatives who are like hashing out the exact details and then the leaders themselves kind of can be a little bit more detached.
Right Yeah, apparently we might find out a little bit more next week, so we'll be watching that.
Next week
there's going to be another hearing, I think, with Joseph McGuire, who's the acting director of he's going to testify in an open session.
Ooh!
So we might learn more about the complaint there. What would it be if it's like such a buzzkill?
I feel like it's like Trump promising like endless McDonald's to someone.
Yeah.
Like, I promise I will open a McDonald's in St. Petersburg. It'll be the greatest McDonald's.
Oh, yeah.
Fish fillets for everyone.
Exactly.
For all the Russian people. All right. This has been the news. Guys, amazing news. In addition to everything we just said. The rating on iTunes has increased from 4.5 to 4.7. So that's thanks to all of you.
Thank you so much.
Amazing things can happen when you vote.
Yeah.
Please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. We really genuinely appreciate it.
Yeah, like it really does make a difference, a huge difference.
It does. And tell all your friends. We will send you shit if you do so. And some of your friends can win AirPods, or you could win AirPods if you stupidly haven't signed up for the email yet.
Yeah.
You've been missing out. Not just on AirPods, but
it made me laugh out loud yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday. Like, and I just read it out loud to a bunch of people, and they were like, Amanda, style, and then they were laughing.
I LOL usually like one time, right, at least per email.
Yeah.
So
I mean, she is a professional comedian, so.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, not every professional comedian is that funny.
True. No, that is very true.
As we've learned this lately. Week, yeah. So guys, that is enough of us for now. Upcoming, we have an interview with Liz Plank, the author of the new book For the Love of Men, and we think you're really going to enjoy it. This episode is brought to you by Modern Fertility. You've probably thought about the next step in your career and in your relationship, but what about planning for a baby?
Or a dog? No, I'm kidding.
Women are having children later in life, but biology hasn't changed, and we need tools to understand the future of our fertility. So a lot of us want more information about our ability to get pregnant, even if we're not there yet. And to do that, you need Modern Fertility. Modern Fertility is a quick and easy hormone test that you can take at home, whether you're thinking of trying for a baby now or you just want to know your options for the future. Your results are delivered within 10 days, and your personalized dashboard will give you insight into how many eggs you have, hormone levels, and any reproductive flags, red flags.
So my dad has this saying, remember your six P's. Prior preparation prevents piss poor performance.
Oh.
So this is applies to that. If you're just like a planner and you need to know things ahead of a time, this is for you.
I mean, I would love to know how many eggs I have. And that's why I'm going to use Modern Fertility to find out that information. At the same time, Modern Fertility also enables you to talk one-on-one with a fertility nurse or to use the timeline tool so you can plan ahead for when you'll be ready for a baby. And honestly, proactive testing with your doctor can cost over $1,000. But with Modern Fertility, you can get the same exact information for just $159. And right now, Modern Fertility is offering our listeners $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/sup. That's $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/sup. So guys, I'm trying it out and you guys should too. That's modernfertility.com/sup for $20 off your first fertility test. Hey guys, we are here with Liz Plank, activist and author of the new book, For the Love of Men, A New Vision for Mindful Masculinity. Welcome, Liz.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on my favorite podcast.
Thanks. We are so excited to have you. I'm a huge fan on Instagram and just I watch you on Ari Melber all the time. It's the first thing I do when I get home every day.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. I love Ari. He is a perfect example of a mindful masculinity champion.
He is. You're right. So how is it going? How does it feel to be done with the book?
It feels good. It really does. I mean, I don't want to compare this to giving birth because I know how difficult that is. But it does feel a little bit like my baby's coming out. I had a genre reveal book shower for myself where I revealed the genre of my book. It's nonfiction. And I threw myself a party with all my friends and family, and it kind of felt like I was having a baby.
I saw
which might never happen. So I'm glad that I got to enjoy, you know, a day that was all about me.
Yeah.
so yeah, it feels great. I've been working on this for almost 5 years. So it's been incredible to see the reaction, a lot of people taking this conversation into their own lives, into their own communities, their own families, and spread it all around. I really think this is more than a book. This is a movement. And I'm glad to see so many people take it on in their lives.
Yeah. I mean, 5 years, that is definitely, that's longer than 9 months. So,
I saw your
genre reveal party. I thought that was so clever. I was like, I'm always trying to come up for like, with like the new gender reveal party, you know, like what is going to replace that?
It.
Yeah. I think it should be replaced with
a new,
I think it should be emotionally healthy adult parties. And when you're like 25, your parents get to reveal if you turned out okay.
Yes. Yeah. And like, we should just be worried about like, will my son or daughter, you know, or gender non-binary child, be happy, be healthy, have access to healthcare. I don't know. Those things seem much more important than whether they're a boy or a girl.
Agreed. So, I mean, you say the book is a movement. That much is apparent. I will say, like, as I was starting it, I was like, this kind of feels like a bit like Gloria Steinem-esque. Like, it feels like it could really be a paradigm shift in the way people think about gender roles. So I guess for people who are not aware of what the book is about, can you kind of share the thesis of it?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much. Any comparison to Gloria Steinem, I will take, though I don't feel that way at all. She's obviously one of the many authors that I grew up reading and loving. And so, look, the book is basically a call to men to be part of this conversation around gender equality. And I thought it was really important to bring in men, not just as allies to women, but also as clear beneficiaries of gender equality. There are so many ways that men benefit from being included in these conversations. There are so many ways that men are also the victims of gender stereotypes and that they are pressured to be a certain way. And we've had such a rich conversation around questioning these ideals of womanhood. And we just have not had the same kind of big curiosity and big conversation when it comes to some of the messages that are out there to men and boys and how it constrains them from being and reaching their full potential in the world. So I go through, you know, every chapter is, you know, there's a health chapter, there's a fatherhood chapter, there's a chapter that focuses on men and their friendships. In so many respects, we see the effects of the patriarchy, you know, hurting women, but we really see it hurting men in so many clear ways that get a lot less attention.
Yeah, I think that was kind of one of the most interesting things about it, because even though it's obviously a book from a feminist perspective, it doesn't feel like what you typically think of. I think a lot of times feminism can get a bad rap from, you know, less progressive people as being sort of a hostile movement towards men. And I felt that you could really feel the warmth that you were intending this with, honestly. Was that something you were thinking about as you were forming, I guess, what would eventually be this book?
I mean, I think I'm inherently, you know, my parents, well, first of all, I'm a Pisces, so I'm just an empath. I'm a wreck, you know. I'm a very emotional person. I feel things very intensely, and I feel empathy and compassion for the men that I spoke to. I mean, I interviewed just, you know, hundreds of people, got hundreds of men to talk to me about the toys that they were denied as a child, for example, that told me about the things and the messages that they received when they were young kids from their fathers, from their mothers, right? This comes from all of us, from our society. And I couldn't help but feel empathy for the pain that they were feeling. And it was such an important journey, not to talk about my book like it's, you know, Bachelor in Paradise, but I did go through a journey of realizing how much of the pain that I had been through from the men in my life, whether they were in my family or, you know, my relationships or even men on the street. You know, every woman has been, you know, I've yet to met a woman who's not been negatively impacted by a man in her life, whether it's in sexual harassment on the street or in the office or sexual assault. But this pain that is being projected onto us from men, a lot of that pain is actually pain that starts off being thrown at them. The patriarchy enforces all kinds of behaviors and attitudes, and men learn and are rewarded for these negative impact, these negative actions. And in a lot of ways, men are not taught how to be emotional beings in the world. They're taught to deny their emotions. So if you are taught your entire life to deny your emotions, when you are going to feel an emotion, you are not going to know how to manage it. And so when you don't know how to manage your emotions, you end up listening to what society tells you a man does. A man goes out and he is, you know, dominates other people. He is aggressive. He gets laid, right? All of, you know, or in extreme examples, we're seeing young men who are so distraught and so isolated and so, you know, emotionally inept that they're going out and they're going to, you know, shoot up their school. This is a public health crisis. This man crisis is connected to so many issues. And the way that we talk about it is often purely as how it affects women, but it really affects everyone. It affects men themselves. It affects our entire society. And so I just, I couldn't believe, you know, the data I was finding on this. And I was angry that I have a master's in gender theory. You know, I've spent the last 10 years researching and reporting on gender and coming from it from an academic perspective. And I didn't even know these things. I didn't know that men live longer in societies that are more gender equal. I didn't know that female empowerment can literally protect men from committing suicide. It is an antidote to the increasing levels of male suicide in our society. Because when women work, if a man loses his job, that's not his entire identity, right? There's not so much on his shoulders to figure out. And so to me, this is just the tip of the iceberg. This conversation is so big. And every person, every interview I've done, someone has shown me a different way to perceive it and a different way it's affected their lives. So I'm just excited for us to have this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a necessary conversation. I think even just the fact that you made it about something as broad as like it is unhealthy for humans to suppress their emotions.
Yes.
And so when you have half the population that is expressly not like in the way that they're taught, not a lot. It's not like a secret thing that they can't feel their emotions. It's like that is stated. You are not allowed, essentially. And that would obviously lead to degrees of mental illness amongst the male population. So, I mean, it really is just, it's so important. I love when you said the whole idea of masculinity is not failing at it, that men are not, you know, they're taught that they're not allowed to fail. And now in a society that, I mean, I do think obviously American society has become more gender equal over time. And I'm curious, did you happen to read a few days ago, there was a piece, I think it was in Slate by Amanda Marcotte, and she basically was writing about how the kind of the authoritarian direction that we're going in society is a response to feminism. And I feel like it really dovetailed with, as I was also reading your book, that if we did have a society where it wasn't just like feminism that men had to be scared of, but a feminism that actually includes men and kind of goes on, you know, makes changes on their terms that would actually be helpful for them, maybe there wouldn't be this backlash
to I feminism. Agree. Yeah. And I like, to be completely honest, I get it. I get why some men are, I mean, logically speaking, no man should be afraid of feminism, but I understand why some men are afraid of feminism.
Right.
A lot of honestly, particularly white men, I mean, white man has become a slur in our society, right?
Right.
And of course there are a lot of white men who are doing bad things, but there's more white men doing good things. And if we are against the generalization around gender, right, we're against saying, well, all women are this way because some women are this way, we shouldn't be doing the same thing when it comes to men. We shouldn't be generalizing around gender. We shouldn't be reinforcing this gender binary, right? And that's kind of the path that we're on right now. And I, you know, I wrote a piece for Glamour where I share some of these difficulties that I've had in some spaces that I've been in where I have tried to bring up men, you know, several, because I've been studying and researching this, you know, every day for the past, 4 years. I would bring it up and I would often be shut down or mocked. Like I remember being in a feminist panel and 2 years ago, and we were talking about women in media and we're talking about all these, you know, really important issues of sexual harassment and Me Too. And I brought up, you know, but well, what about men? You know, men also should be part of this conversation. What should they do? And, you know, someone I have so much respect for and, you know, said, well, I don't care about men. And she got a round of applause. You know, this is not just like her. This is everyone, right? We applaud when white man is used as an insult. We think it's white man is a punchline now. And right. I think that we can't be too ignorant about what message that sends to certain people. I think to men who are extremely progressive, for men who have been very educated about these issues, they know what women and what our society means when it kind of laughs at white men in this way. But I think that for a lot of men who are suffering in this country, who have lost their jobs to globalization, who have, you know, whose sons are dying of opioid addiction and overdoses, you know, they're in pain and they're suffering. And so when we go, ha ha, white men are, you know, have everything, they don't feel that way. And in a certain sense, they're right. I mean, they don't sense, that privilege, even though they have that white privilege and they have that male privilege. We have to admit that that everyone's pain and suffering is worth recognizing, and we shouldn't be ranking people's pains. We should be acknowledging it, and not feeling like your pain is being acknowledged, not feeling seen, is exactly how you get a man like Donald Trump elected president, right. I believe.
Yeah.
He said, I see you, I hear you, and I'm here for you. That's what his whole campaign was. You
right.
can really, truly distill it to that.
That's true. But that's something he never heard clearly.
Oh, my God, no. I mean, it comes out in a million different ways, and he obviously is mixing that. So, you know, Brene Brown talks about this. She says, you mix, you know, a population of people who feel like they don't belong, and who don't feel heard. And then you mix that with being able to point to a villain or an enemy, and you can rule the world. So Donald Trump has done that very thing. He has chosen a group of people who feel left out and who feel not seen or heard. And he is using the villain of immigrants, of women, of Muslims, right, to weaponize their pain against them,
right.
To vote for a person who ultimately Donald Trump does not remarkably enhance the lives of white men. He says he does, but his policies, taking away Medicare, taking away health care, you know, gun deaths by suicide for white men are the highest in our country. He enables these laws and takes away these protections. And so I think that we are not seeing the way that Donald Trump is bad for women. Donald Trump is bad for people of color. Donald Trump is bad for LGBTQ people. Donald Trump is also bad for straight white men. And we have to be able to talk about that without thinking that means that we're not acknowledging the pain of people who are not white or who are not male.
Right. I think about that all the time, how some of the people who think that Donald Trump is protecting them, he's actually screwing over in the worst ways. And you see that, like, I see that all the time. And I'm just like, don't you see what he's doing to you?
Yeah.
So if you started this book 5 years ago, how did having him be the president and seeing where his presidency went affect where your book went?
That's a good question. And yes, so I actually rewrote the book three times. I rewrote it after the election, obviously, because so much changed and so much was revealed to us in terms of what was going on in our society. And we were so much less advanced than a lot of us thought we were. And so, yes, you know, one of the things that I got the opportunity to do is go on the campaign trail. And so I actually went to one of Trump's last rallies in Pennsylvania. It was only 4 or 5 days before the election. And I wanted to just talk to women there because we were fascinated by this idea of, you know, 7 out of 10 women had an unpopular view of Donald Trump. So who were the women who were going to vote for this guy? And obviously, as we know, the majority of white women voted for him. And, you know, there were a lot of women who supported him in the end. But I asked women, you know, I said white women who were at this Trump rally, because there were only white women,
of course,
who said, basically, I said, 7 out of 10 women don't have a popular view of Donald Trump. What would you say to the women who you think should vote for Donald Trump? And she told me, I think that 7 out of 10 women have an unpopular view of a lot of men. And that didn't make me sad for women. It made me sad for men.
Right.
And that's when I realized this guy is going to win, not because we hate women, because we have such a low standard for men in our society.
It's
someone
true.
Who calls, you know, Mexicans rapists, who creates a ban on Muslims, who is caught on tape bragging about sexual harassment. I mean, I don't even need to go down the line of the things that he's done that are so vile. A man that is so vile. We don't have a better model of masculinity that we think that that's the best that we can do. And I think that there's so much attention about, how Donald Trump is insulting to women. I think he's so insulting to men.
Yeah.
I just,
I'm waiting for more men to talk about this because I feel like, you know, me talking about it can only, I can only talk about it for so long. He goes after men in such gendered ways. He goes after crying Chuck, right? He goes after men for crying because we're banning Muslims from our country. We're doing something that's completely unconstitutional, that's breaking families apart. Chuck Schumer was crying when he talked about the Muslim ban when it was happening, and he gave him this nickname of Crying Chuck. He called Ted Cruz a pussy. Right. You know, this is like, he's a teenage boy, and he's the below worst person.
He's below a teenage boy.
Yes, exactly. And so he is the poster child for this idealized masculinity that's killing us. And so I really would love to see, especially when we're going into 2020, more attention to this. I want men to be talking about how bad the Republican Party is making them look like, right, and how low the standard is for them. If any man is listening to this podcast right now, I'm sure many are, please, yeah, talk about this. It should be in the zeitgeist. I know that you're embarrassed by Donald Trump. Talk about it.
Right. I mean, there's so many things in this book that you sort of flip on their head logically. I mean, the Disney princesses consent example, another that you just said, you were like, we're actually lowering the standard for men.
Yeah.
And that hurts them. That's something that no one, it's just so not even a thought. And I mean, now I know I'll never be able to think about it in the same way, but it requires like a real paradigm shift to be able to get it. But I just wanted to ask you one more question about dating. So,
we all want to know. It all comes back to that.
not even about your dating, but I mean, feel free to use yourself as an example. How would you, I guess, like, tell women or want women based on this sort of paradigm shift to sort of like approach the men in their lives, or approach, if they, you know, don't have a significant other, how to approach looking for a potential partner, and like what kind of qualities do you think indicate mindful masculinity, or how could you help cultivate mindful masculinity in the before the men in your lives?
Yeah, that's a great question. How many good questions?
Thank you.
You should be a podcast host or something.
Oh, I do this. This is my third podcast of the day. So,
yeah, that's a great question, and something that I obviously think a lot about as a, you know, a single young woman
the bar for your I mean, assuming you're straight and looking for a guy, the bar for that guy is pretty high.
Yes. And I am actually queer. So if there are women listening, I'm also into that. But because, you know, this is basically now become this is The Bachelor. Now we're here to find me my future partner.
Yeah.
I'm going to list what I want. No, I'm kidding. So, yes. So I actually learned the most about men when I started dating women, which also happened throughout this book.
Coincidentally,
I came out, a year ago. And so
congrats.
I started dating.
Is that what
Thank
I say?
You. Yeah. Thank you so much. It was really scary, but I'm really happy I did it.
And, that's awesome.
I learned a lot about men and about my relationships with men and about what it was like dating men when I started dating women, because I realized how much unnecessary power structures exist in dating, how many preordained roles we have in our society when it comes to dating. Even when you're a radical feminist dating in the most progressive city, you know, in America probably, even then you fall into gender roles. And so I decided to go on a chivalry diet, and like basically go cold turkey, no more grand gestures, no more, you know, him paying for anything when I was in, you know, when I was dating men. And it was really interesting because I thought that I would lose. I was like, oh, now I'm going to have to pay for shit. You know, I'm going to have to go on trips and pay for my own airfare. and I thought I was going to lose something, and I ended up actually gaining so much. I realized, I didn't realize how much chivalry and how much, again, the guy paying for the dinner, the guy deciding where we're going to go. These are small little ways that they will express control in the relationship. And I don't even think that they're aware of it, and because I wasn't aware of it. But suddenly when I wasn't letting, you know, sort of one person steer the wheel is the best way for me to put it. I suddenly started having way more agency in that relationship. I started being far more communicative about what I needed in that relationship. I didn't realize how much I was fitting into the mold of what we expect a woman to do in a relationship with a man. And yeah, dating women, I was like, oh, wow, I don't know who pays. Like, I guess I'll pay and you can pay next time. I don't know who decides where to go. I can find a spot for us. We're just two people trying to get to know each other, which is what dating should be. Dating should not be weighed with all of these, like, you know, transactional ideas, right? It's, after all, dating is a beautiful human experience of just, you know, discovering someone and knowing if you're the right partner for each other. When you're focused on who's paying for what and like, oh my God, I can't believe that he did this faux pas of like, you know, we shared the bill. That must mean all these things. It's like, who cares? Right. Did he see me? Like, does he understand who I am? How do I feel when I'm with him? Like, those were the things that I was suddenly much more focused on. And so to answer your question, I think, yeah, just examine. This is all about self-discovery. This is why this conversation, I think, is so exciting. So often when we talk about feminism and about masculinity, it can feel very political and very, like, why, you know, I don't know, weighty. It doesn't have to be. It's actually just about discovering, how does gender impact me in my life? How have I thought about gender? Roles or behaviors or attitudes have I taken on as a young girl that I no longer need? And the same thing for men. I think encouraging men in our lives to do that same self-discovery, to ask themselves these questions, is the best thing we can do. And the best way for me to start when I do that is to just ask men point blank, what do you think is hard about being a man?
Interesting.
It's a really simple question. And that starts a conversation from a different point than, you know, masculinity is bad for all these reasons, or, you know, this is all the things that you're doing bad. Start from a place of, you know, how can this conversation be helpful to you? What is blocked inside of you? What is an armor that you're wearing that you no longer need? Tell me about what part of you feel like you can't show. These are, I think, much more fun conversations to have and productive conversations to have with the men in our lives.
What answers do you usually get when?
Oh my gosh, so many.
When you ask them that.
A lot of men have said other men, unfortunately. So I would assume that a lot of men found that women were made it hard to be a man, that they had problems with the women in their lives. A lot of men have problems with men in their lives. So they are either, they feel, bullied by men in their lives, or they feel like they're walking on eggshells. They feel like they need to perform when they're around other men. They have issues that they are struggling with that they're not talking about with other men, 'cause it would be quote unquote weird. So they're not able in a lot of respects to build, I think, the intimacy that they want to build with other men. And a lot of men, have just never thought about that. They've just never thought about the fact that they have a gender, because gender means women in our society.
Right.
And so I think this is, you know, these conversations are going to evolve, and I'm excited about, I'm excited about thinking that what I'm saying right now is so basic, and like that, like, we thought this was a paradigm shift, like, you know, 10 years from now or 5 years from now, we will have evolved even more, in terms of this conversation. And I'm excited about how it's going to unfold and what kind of discoveries people are going to make in their lives.
Right. It's really so interesting. I feel like I could talk to you about this all day. Like,
oh, me too.
The number of times I've had conversations with female friends about things like male friendships and how, like, they're just not as deep, or how when we are dating in heterosexual relationships, like, that there is definitely a sort of like, oh, I'm supposed to be equal, but yet I want him to take the lead. But am I allowed to want him to take the lead?
Yes.
Like, does that actually feel good? Or have I just been told that that feels good?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's really, I think it's probably an evolution for everyone. And it really is, you know, eye-opening. And I mean, as so many listeners, I'm sure, are, you know, either they're dating people or they're in relationships or they're advancing in relationships, and, you know, just sort of like discovering more and more about those dynamics, having, you know, this as, you know, the idea of mindful masculinity as you know, a new way of thinking about things, I think is so, so helpful.
Yeah.
And just understanding where men are coming from, why they might get, you know, angry about this thing or that thing. And it's really just, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
So,
you know what it is? It's about assuming the best in men instead of the worst in men. That's just, that is the best way for me to describe what I, you know, my journey for the last 4 years. It's really that. That's the difference. And it's actually made my life so much better on a personal level.
It's really yeah. amazing. I love Thank this you. Book. Thank you so much for talking to us, to the audience. Guys, you should definitely check out this book, For the Love of Men, A New Vision for Mindful Masculinity by Liz Plank. It is really something to read. It is.
Thank you.
I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I'm just going to do our little sign off. Until the end of democracy, this is Sammy Fishbein, and this has been the Betches Up Podcast.
Betches.